This is a 911 Plus production.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the final episode of season one of Unscripted, the Cascadia cast. Today we're talking to none other than Aniko Kazaz. She played Maria Walters on Cascadia, Declan's wife, Wesley Badger's mistress. This conversation is very interesting. We talk about her life in the film industry. We talk about her process of creating Maria Walters and what it was like to record remotely, but also then in the studio. We talk about her process of making her own work, writing her own projects, learning sign language. We dive into it all, so sit back and relax. Enjoy this unscripted chat with Aniko Kazaz. Let's just go back to when we met. Do you remember how we met? Of course you do. But
when the dinosaurs roamed the earth.
When the dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Yes. If you'll have to correct me, but I'm pretty confident that we met at Slate Actors
we
Studio.
Did. Yes. We did. Slate's was, for anyone who's listening, it was like this little actors meetup. You know, a bunch of local actors would meet up once a week on a Wednesday, I'll never forget. And we would sit around and we would give each other scripts and we would go up and perform and we'd critique and give advice and all these things. And I remember seeing you and just being such a fan of yours, and I just loved watching you perform each week. And then, you know, when it came time to doing Cascadia, well, we'll get into all that later because I have a little journey of how I cast you.
Oh.
But yes, I don't even think you know, but anyways, let's start from like your beginning, I guess. Where were you born and where were you raised? Are you from Canada?
No. So I was born in Hungary, in Budapest.
Right.
And then I'll give the very brief Cole notes because it's a story I'm writing as a script. So I was born in Budapest.
Oh, wow.
And then my family, at the time my parents were both doing their postgraduate studies, affiliated with a university in the States. So this at the time was, I was born back in the day when Hungary was still a communist republic. So my parents had gone to do their research in the States at a university there in their field, and their field was associated with stuff that was involved with space science. So the Communist Republic demanded that my father spy on the research being done in the U.S. at the university he was affiliated with, and he didn't. He refused.
Right.
So they told us we had to come back to Hungary. We knew what would happen if we did, so we didn't. And then we were sort of stuck, and at the last minute, at the nth hour, my mom secured a job in Canada. So from the States, we came to Canada when we were supposed to have gone back home, but it wasn't safe for us anymore to go home.
Wow. And was this before you were born or as a kid?
As a kid, yeah. So I was born in Budapest. I was 2.5 when I went to the States with my parents while they were doing their studies. And then the intention had always been to go back and live in Hungary, but then they couldn't go back. So we immigrated to Canada. I came to Canada in 1989. So I would have been, I don't want to tell you my age.
No, don't worry.
I would have been about 7. And then, you know, the wall fell and the whole situation sort of became moot. So we eventually did get our passports back. But by then we were home. Canada was home. So we stayed in Canada. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's so interesting to hear these stories because I've been interviewing a bunch of actors at this point and a lot of them aren't from here. And it's interesting how like they kind of found themselves in Canada and that the whole history of like how things are just like meant to line up for you to end up here. It's really crazy. Like I just think about my grandparents and like my grandparents met in a foreign country, that they're both from different countries, and they met in a foreign country, and then they fell in love, and then they like had kids, and then they moved to Canada. Weren't supposed to stay in Canada, but they were told money was growing on trees, and it's a better life, as you know, a lot of immigrants are told.
Where are those trees? Can I help?
Right? Yeah, exactly. So you know, and then, but I'm like, if they never met, how would they? Maybe they would have never came here, and then I would have never grown up here. Like, it's so crazy. And then my mom would have never met my dad, and then it's so crazy how everything happens. You know,
for
a reason. How did you? When did you start acting? And like, what caught? Like, what was the bug for you? The acting bug. When do you remember when that happened for you?
I was so young that I don't actively remember it, but my mom says that from the time I could talk, I said I was going to be an actress. So it was never a question. It was always, that's what I'm going to do. I remember I tried to do musical theater as a kid because the town that I first immigrated to was very small. So the nearby larger town, which also was very small, had a small theater troupe, but they only did musicals, and I am completely tone deaf. So I remember auditioning, getting in only because they needed the bodies, and then them asking me to lip sync all the songs.
Stop.
I couldn't sing on key.
Oh my God. So then what, so what led you to, like, so I guess you did it throughout school and high school. And then what age did you get, or were you like in your older years when you got an agent, or were you like a kid? How did you kind of get to that point?
That's a good question. I wish I'd had an agent as a kid, but my parents didn't know any better. I mean, we were immigrants from Hungary who, they worked in the sciences. So I did community theater. I think they thought that I would grow out of the bug, but it only got stronger. I did local theater, community theater, black box theater, all of that stuff when I was in high school. And then I auditioned for and got into a conservatory acting program for university. So I did that for 4 years. And then I went to New York and I studied at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. And then I, in Toronto, eventually got an agent. It was hard. It was really hard for me. We were talking about this before we went on mic, that it's been a long struggle, like a long, hard haul. So my first agent was probably someone I found on the back of a package of crackers.
And then, as one does at the beginning.
Yeah. And then I elevated from that agent and I had a little bit of a better agent, but it was still not great. And then I'm at an agency now where I'm just so happy and so lucky. Yeah. So I finally got there. But I didn't get with them until, I believe it was 2018. So 4 years ago.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I always say, like, finding an agent is so, like, it's about the partnership. Like, yes, you can go with a big name and that comes with, you know, pros and cons, and then you can go with like a smaller name, that comes with pros and cons, but at the end of the day, like, you're the talent and you're gonna get the job, and if you, like, if it's meant to be, and like, you have to have a relationship with your agent, because I've had many agents that we didn't vibe, we just didn't, we weren't on the same level, and it, like, just didn't do anything for me. So when I was, like, looking for a new agent, like, I was looking for, like, a connection. And I know it sounds kind of generic, but, like, it's so true. Like, it's your partner. It's your partner in this business. And, like, you have to trust them. So I'm happy that you found the person for you, you know? And it's, you've been killing it. So I'm happy that this is all working out. I always wonder, especially with immigrant parents, how do they react to you saying, "Mom, Dad, I'm going to be an actress full time, for real. I'm going to get an agent." What was their reactions?
I think because I wanted to be an actress from so young, they sort of saw the writing on the wall. They hoped against hope, and suggested, you know, doctor, lawyer, all of those immigrant parent tropes. And I just wasn't interested. And so when I started doing theater school and they understood that I was, this is serious for me, they have been so supportive. I just, I premiered a film that I co-wrote, produced, and co-starred in. At WIFF, at the Windsor International Film Festival, about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And they came. They came to see the movie. They came to support. And, you know, it's a short film. It's a long ride to come see a seven-minute film. Yeah. And they came all the way. So they've been tremendously supportive.
So what's the film about?
So the film is about a deaf woman. Over the course of COVID, I started to learn sign language. And I got connected with a woman who's an actress and a deaf person, who became a very good friend of mine, and she became my personal sign language coach, and she and I just connected on so many levels, and she ended up telling me a story about something that had happened to her, and it was very clearly discrimination because of her deafness. So we took that story, we boiled it down to the core, and we made a film about a deaf woman who's trying to do something, and because of the bias of the person she's trying to do or get something from, she encounters obstacles, and then she figures out how to destroy those obstacles with her secret superpower, which is her deafness.
And were you learning sign language just for fun and then this kind of happened, or were you, like, studying to make this film?
I actually was learning for fun. So sign language is something I've always been interested in. I don't know why, but it's just fascinating to me. I think it's such beautiful language. Yeah, so challenging. I mean, you speak Hungarian, and Hungarian is tremendously challenging language, and sign language just trumps it completely. So I started to learn it during COVID because we were all locked down, and I was like, this is something I've wanted to do. I have the time. I'm gonna do it. And then after about a year, my agent had known that I was doing this and submitted me for an ASL interpreter role. So I ended up booking that. So I played an ASL interpreter on Transplant, the CTV show. I think it's on NBC now. Yeah. And then it just continued, and I realized that I was fluent enough that I could get by, and I had Kat's help, and I really wanted to help her tell her story. She really wanted to tell her story. That's how that ended up happening.
And what's the film name, and when will it be out for the public, if at all?
So it's called Cat's Got Your Tongue. Yeah, I like it because her name, our lead's name is Kat, yeah, and she plays Kat. Yeah. And it's premiered at film festivals so far. I don't know when we'll have it out publicly, but mm-hmm. I will definitely post about it and people
can go
that
way. You said you directed it, right?
No, I hired someone else to direct it because I was acting in it. I co-wrote it and I produced it. So I think I felt like I was too close to the material to direct it and do it justice.
Very smart, very smart. I feel like when you do too many things, which I've learned, it can get very overwhelming and chaotic, and that will just like hurt your performance and hurt like a lot of things. So it's good that you did that. And yeah, you could just take a break and not worry about all that. You could just be in the moment and be the actress for that day and then let someone else kind of direct you. And you already know the material because you co-wrote it. So it's in you, right? And I think that's really, really smart. So do you have interest in writing and like directing your own stuff like going forward? Or was this kind of just a moment that you just kind of happened to do with her?
I'm definitely a writer. So I've written, like I took, also during COVID, I took U of T's continuing education courses in fiction and writing. Wow. So I've written a bunch of short stories. I'm working on a long form novel and I've written a number of scripts. All of them short scripts. I've never written a feature. So the goal, I'm working on another script right now to produce this year, or sorry, 2023. So I want to produce a film again and do the festival run again because I really got bitten by that. I don't think I want to direct. I'm not.
Yeah.
I love seeing other people take what I've written and come up with new magical ideas, because that was what was so great about my director, is I had the story in my head and I'm quite visual, so I visualized what I thought it would look like, and then she just elevated it. She added so much to it that was even better than what I had imagined. So I like seeing that happen. I like seeing people take your shit and run with it.
That's so cool. So I mean, you said that you've only ever wanted to act and that's only what you've ever done, and you've told your parents this. Have you ever like thought about going to school for something else? Have you gone to, I mean, other than the writing and like it's a completely different industry, have you ever done that or thought about doing something else? Because I know with me, like I've thrown the towel in a few times.
I'm
like, F this, I'm done, I'm gonna go to school for something else, or you know, here I am still acting. But you know, have you ever tried to look at another path, or has this always been your focus and goal?
I think both. I mean, I think that it's always been the focus and goal, and I have left a couple of times and then it's just pulled me back because there is no choice. It's I've realized that it's not a choice. I have to do it or I become sort of a dry husk of myself if I'm not storytelling. So recently when auditions were really quiet, I was like, fuck this, I'm quitting. And then I told my husband, who's also named Adam, I was like, Adam, I'm going to be a doctor. And he was like, of all the fucking things you could pick, why would you pick that? Like, you could go to any other school. Why doctor? So, literally. I mean, I did not go, but there's always like, especially in Canada, I find that it's hard for us to not be able, like, we have to do something else to support ourselves financially. You're very lucky if you can support yourself financially, but it's not really, it's a very rare thing. And even if you do book, let's say, a series and you're shooting it for 5, 6, 7 years, what do you do after that series if something else doesn't come along? So there's always been sort of something in the back pocket for sure.
Yeah. And I love that, like you said, you were doing sign language, you're doing all these things that just helps you, one, as a performer, elevates your performance, and you have more of knowledge, like knowledge is power, but also you're not focused so much on the desperation of getting the role. You have other things, other avenues that you're doing, and that helps you kind of relax when it comes to auditioning, because you're like, well, I have other things I can do as well. You know, I think if you just put all your eggs in one basket and it's just so like, I need this role, it doesn't do you any justice mentally and in your performance, in my opinion, from what I've experienced, because I've been both, you know? Yeah.
I totally agree. And one thing I would add to that is that there was a long time where I only focused on acting. I was like, I'm going to take classes and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But if you, as actors, we are storytellers who convey aspects of life. And if you're not living your life, you can't convey those believably. So if I'm not out there having experiences, meeting people, engaging with people, watching how people tick, speaking various languages with people, picking up different skills, then I can't convey those things in a performance because I don't know them.
So true. Like the way that is so like well put, because I feel like I grew up as a child actor, you know, and I felt that like as a kid, it was so hard for me to get the dramatic scripts and all these things because I didn't go through life yet. Like how can I have like tapped into like, I guess that was my job as an actor, is to like tap into that. But it was harder, I found, as a kid to like portray characters that have gone through like real like hard trauma. Luckily I've never gone through something as traumatic as some of the characters I played as a teen, you know, whatever. And but then, like, as you grow up and you experience things and you witness things and you interact with people, whatever, you have all this knowledge and this, like, information of just observing people, you know, and it helps you as a performer so much. So I relate to that so much.
It's a well to draw from, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I guess with that being said, I have a question with... tell us your worst audition you've ever had. There has to be something.
I mean, I've had many. So yes. I've obviously face planted and made an ass of myself on many occasions.
Like physically or like figuratively?
Figuratively for the most part. I'm trying to think about, I had a physical experience, but it wasn't an audition. I was actually on set being filmed where everything just went horribly wrong. Physically. And I slapped myself in the face in the middle of a take because I just, my hand slipped off of, I was a police officer and I had the, they can't see, I'm pointing to my shoulder, the radio.
Yeah,
on my shoulder. And I was trying to reach it and I just slapped myself in the face instead. And they kept...
Looper.
Yeah, well, no, they kept rolling, so I called cut. And you don't do that as an actor. But I was like, you can't use this. Yeah. But as an audition, the one that really pops to mind is first agent. The first agent I, you know, found on the back of a cereal box. I don't know what compelled me to do this, but I had put on my resume that I'm a fly fisher. I've never done fly fishing in my life, but I fish. Like, okay. I used to go fishing with my dad, and I was like, fly fishing can't be that hard. I'm just going to throw that on the resume.
Such a random thing.
Of all things. So I had fly fishing on my resume, and then there was a fishing hosting show, like one of those networks where you host a show about fishing. So they look for a cute girl to host a show about dudes fishing. Yeah. So my agent saw that on my resume, so she submitted me, but she took it to the next level, and she told them I was a professional fly fisher. So I had to go into the audition, and I didn't even know how to throw the line. I was just like, guys, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I tried.
The jig is up.
The jig is up, yeah. Because there's a very specific way that you, and I looked it up online the night before. I was like, maybe I can pick this up. And no, it wasn't happening. So needless to say, I did not book that job.
So did you kind of, like, tell your agent to take it off your resume, or how did you kind of go around that? Like...
After that, I had it deleted off the resume. I went into the resume and I pulled off all the things that I couldn't actually do. Because we do that.
That's a trauma. That's an actual trauma. That's actually like something I would be scared, like wake up a cold sweat. Like, shit, like I have to do this tomorrow. Yeah, no, that's an actor trauma for sure. That's so funny.
So now I'm very honest.
Yeah, you're like, I learned that too. I'm like, if I can't do it, like, full confidently, like, I'm not putting it on my resume.
100%.
So embarrassing.
Yes. Yes.
So we talked a little bit about, like, you being on camera and working, you know, with film and television, but have you done any voice work prior to Cascadia? And we'll get to Cascadia in a moment, but I want to know what's your journey with voice acting?
So I have done voice work. I've narrated audiobooks.
Okay.
So I turn on my audiobook voice and I read books to people. I don't think I've ever done a commercial. I've obviously, as an actor, recorded one of those, voice over demo reels, I think. I don't know what they're called. Voice
like
demo?
Like a trailer voice?
Or... Yeah. No, not a trailer voice. Just the guy. I've had tons of auditions for, you know, like, drink this coffee because it's delicious. Mm.
Yes.
Haven't done those, but I have read audiobooks. So that's... Nice.
Well, what's the process? Because I don't actually know much about that world. Do you... Like, how many sessions does it take to do an audiobook? And how long is it, usually?
Well, it really depends on the book. So in... one case, like, I read the entire book and I did all the roles, so that took, I think that was 2 weeks maybe, but it's full days. But full days for audiobooks, if I remember correctly, I think the max is 4 hours, just because you lose your voice by the end of the day.
Right.
So you just read the book pre-recording. I went so far as to highlight all the characters' lines in different colors, so that I knew which sort of tone of voice to do for which color. And then I read the audiobook, you go in and you just read it. And often when you're reading out loud, you'll trip over yourself. So you just say, okay, going back now. And then you go back and the person in the booth is recording and editing it all on, not on the spot, but he's just picking takes and making sure that, and then they eventually put it all together. So that book took at least a couple of weeks because I was doing everything. But in some cases, you're only reading a character and then that's not nearly as long.
Now, you said that you highlighted different characters for different voices. Do you change your voice drastically for each thing, or is it kind of just a little tone shift?
tone shift. If you're doing all of the characters, for me anyway, I did tone shifts, sort of like dropping my register for the men, elevating my register for the women, but it still was my voice. I wasn't
right. You're not
on...
fully changing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's interesting. So then I guess when I came to approach you with Cascadia, like, what were you like? First of all, did you know even about audio dramas, or like, what was your reaction when I came to you about this?
I mean, I was number one, super flattered because you came out of the blue, and it was it's so lovely to have someone be like, I love your work. I love what you do. And I want you to do it in my project, because you obviously care about your project and want it to be good. Mm-hmm. So to put that trust in me, I was super flattered. I am a podcast maniac. I listen to podcasts so much. So I was very familiar with the medium. I'd just never done it myself.
Yeah.
So then we did the recording, and that was so lovely. And the only part of the experience that I am sad about is that I wasn't in BC with you guys recording the whole thing as part of the group, because I was sort of the outlier in stupid Toronto.
But it kind of worked out though, because so we recorded, I remember, okay, so I guess this, I'll tell my journey about even getting to you. So as you know, like we've known each other for a few years, and I've always just been a fan. And then I came to you, I don't know if you remember this, but I came to you about this like pilot idea. It wasn't Cascadia, it was something else. I wanted you to play like a mother of some sort. And then it just never worked out. The pilot kind of just fizzled out. And when I say pilot, it's really just to see for myself if I want to go ahead with the story. Didn't work out. And I felt so bad. I was like, I told you about this, and I was like ready to go, and I didn't end up doing it. So I was like, you know, I don't know. So then I wrote Cascadia, and I was living in Vancouver at the time, but then I needed the voice of Maria. And I remember we did the demos. We recorded, I think, just on Zoom. We did, I think it was it Zoom? I don't know. Or you sent me,
like, in.
Yes. And me and the director, Antonio, we freaked out. We were like, this is exactly what we love. Like, we love this, whatever. But this was at the beginning of the time when we were doing everybody on kind of Zoom, and nobody was in person yet. So then eventually we scrapped everything because the Zoom didn't really work out. Everyone had different mics, different backgrounds. Everyone had different things. It did not sound good. So I was like, let's scrap this. Let's go into the recording studio and let's record Cascadia live in person.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember breaking the news to you saying, I think we're gonna have to recast you. You know, we're gonna be doing it in Vancouver. And I was very sad because I just didn't want to recast you, but we want to do it all in person. So we held auditions and we listened to maybe 30, 40 different tapes. It was a lot of people. And nobody came close to you. At all.
Yay!
And I told Antonio, I said, I don't care. Like, they were all great. They were all great actresses. I'm not, you know, but just you had something in you, and maybe it was just the way I heard it. I don't know. You were just so good. And we're like, you know what? She'll be the exception, the one exception that we could do over Zoom. But then it ended up that we recorded in person because I came to Toronto and we just redid your stuff anyway. So it worked out in the end. But yeah.
Yes. And it's hard for me to believe that was like almost a year ago.
I know. But it also is hard for me to believe that it wasn't even a full year yet. Because this year has been very long. I'm like, what? That feels like 10 years ago, but also 5 minutes ago.
So
that was kind of the whole journey for me to get you. And so what was your, I guess, experience of going to the recording studio and playing a role, not being on a set and everything, and just kind of telling this whole story through voice?
I thought it was really fun. I had a blast. Yeah, because I got to do storytelling through a different medium. I got to see you. We were in the room together. You were great, and your director was great because you both knew exactly what you wanted. Mm-hmm. So if you got it, you moved on. If you didn't, you were very clear. I don't like it when directors are afraid of hurting your feelings, and so they're not clear about what they want or that they didn't get what they want. Be clear, and then we'll change it, and we'll move on. And so it was just really fun. And I think that it's a more challenging medium because you don't have your facial expressions to convey what's going on in the story. It's all vocal. And so there's this fine line between turning that vocal emotionality up, but not making it fake or pushed. So I found that really fun to play with and really interesting to explore.
And I think it was really cool because we were writing the script in real time. We didn't actually know the finale, which is probably a mistake to do when you're doing a production. You should probably know what's going to happen, but we were kind of doing it in real time. But I think it was really cool because you recorded the first two episodes not knowing the plot twist, because we didn't even know the plot twist. So, I mean, first of all, let's just talk about Maria. Tell us a little bit about your character and what your thoughts are on her.
I guess. You have to tell me about my character because you are the creator of said character.
Well, Maria, she's just, I love that because originally she was supposed to be this devoted wife, mm-hmm. this, you know, supportive wife, but she has this kid, these kids, and she's scared about Declan and all these things that are going on below the surface. So you played that very genuinely. I'm sure you would have done a great job if you knew the plot twist, but I think because none of us knew the plot twist, it was just so genuine and it wasn't putting on a character. You know, you weren't trying to hide the secret. It was just
yes, there was no secret. Yeah, when you told me the twist, I was like, what? Where did that come from?
Yeah.
That's the impression I had in the beginning of the character is like exactly what you said, that sort of genuine, warm, caring, loving, supportive, on the surface wife. And then it turned out she had this whole backstory with,
Badger.
I loved that, and that was really fun, but it was also funny to, that she changes on a dime like that, and you don't know it's coming.
Yeah, and, like, it was, I still get tweets saying that this is the biggest plot twist in audio drama history, people really have no idea it's coming, and it's so fun, and again, even vocally, like you said earlier, like, you changed vocally, you're like, how did I do? And
he's like,
you did great, like, it's just so fun, and so, like, juicy, I don't know, I loved it so much, and, like, I remember the day we posted that episode. That was the day we ended up being featured on Spotify's Best New Fiction and everything. And I was like, I'm so proud of everybody on this because...
This is so great.
It's just, we worked so hard and it was fun. So did you find that what was kind of like some kind of struggles that you found or maybe not, or something that you maybe enjoyed when recording something like this?
I think I could be wrong. I think they're called Onos. I find those expulsions of like crying or shock or brief emotional sounds the hardest. When there was the bit where I had to start sort of crying and then it elevates and it elevates and it elevates, and you were saying we're going to pull this back when we're putting it into the recording, so it'll sort of just be a very, very light background noise. I find that stuff still really, really tough because I want it to sound authentic. I don't want to sound like I'm pretend crying. So when you have to just take something, oh my God, I completely forgot. I booked another audio job recently. Sorry. And the difficulty of those things came up because that was again challenging for me. So
yeah,
this is a fun story. I got a job for a video game. Ooh. And I probably can't say what the game is, but what I thought was
they're very hush hush.
But I think I can say that for the game, they told me that my role was a talking purse. So I assumed that it was just like a very wealthy woman. She's very uptight. She has tons of money, but she's very Karen. And so I get to the studio to record it, and I am literally a talking purse. I am the main character's purse, and I talk. And so as the... purse, I had to do these sound effects of, for example, her like stuffing her phone into her purse. So the purse is talking and saying something. She doesn't like what the purse is saying, so she stuffs her phone in the purse, and I have to be like,
oh my God. Interesting.
So that's the stuff that I find hard, the crying and the expulsions of sound you know, that sort of stuff.
Did you find, were you recording with the other person in that, for that game, or was it by yourself?
By myself, because the game is out of a very, very far away country. Mm. So we started recording at 9 at night because of their time.
Gotcha.
That was the day. That's as far as I can get.
I mean, you know, that was the one thing that I really wanted for our show, was that I wanted to have that experience of recording together in the same room, you know? And I think... I understand what you mean, where it's like, oh, you have to kind of give all that kind of emotion and stuff, and it's hard when you're by yourself sometimes in the room. And I think, if anything, this kind of helps a bit. I remember with the main cast, we had a lot of, like, ambiances and underwater sounds in their headphones to really help build the world, because, again, we don't have that. We're in a small studio or whatever and a mic, and so it's anything I can to help bring the performance to be the best it could, I will, you know? And so, but again, I think that you did such a good job, and... How did you, like, find, how did you react to those? Like, how did you get your emotions out? Like, what's your process, I guess, to thinking of, like, certain crying scenes or whatever? What's your journey, both on film and voice?
I think that I've gone, because I went to theater school, and in theater school, they were like, you must do this. This is the acting technique. You must do.
Yeah.
Blah, whatever it is. And a lot of it didn't work for me. I find myself trying to force emotion. So I think the thing that works for me is opening myself up, being completely present to what's going on in the story and then actually being able to react as that character in that moment to that emotion. So sometimes, sometimes I will prep myself emotionally, and that looks like thinking about my dead dog or something if I'm, you know, needing to be somewhere vulnerable.
Just to get there,
just to be sort of in the right soup. And then it's the words on the page and being as connected as possible to, like, believing that scenario is real in your own head. And I find that that's the most effective way for me personally. That's not for every actor.
And thank you for saying that, because I feel like a lot of people think that it's like, oh, it's a cookie cutter kind of like step-by-step formula, this plus this equals this. And it's not. Like, you have to truly find your own way. And maybe it's not, like, you know, conventional or whatever that most people do, but you have to do whatever you can to get to that point and to bring out the best performance for you.
Absolutely. So
thank you for saying that.
Yeah, my problem in theater school was that what they taught didn't work for me. So then I was like, am I a bad actor? And it was just not... The best comparison I can give, because I do a lot of physical stuff. So if you're telling someone, with training specifically, I'm thinking about, if you're telling someone to squat and then you're like, bend your knee this way, and they don't get it, then you don't just keep forcing that. You go, okay, actually, let's move your hips this way or do some other thing. And then they get it and it clicks for them. And as an actor, what was taught in school did not click for me. And so I had to figure it out on my own.
I mean, I keep on relating to literally the same thing. I was going to a bunch of different acting classes, and I was doing all these things. I was hearing different schools telling me different techniques, and I had a mental breakdown. I was like, which one is it? Like, I don't know. And I'm getting told I'm wrong if I'm not doing this certain technique. And my current acting coach is like, Adam, like, literally it's just, everyone has their own way. Just figure out what you like and then take bits and pieces. Nobody's right. No acting teacher's correct. Fully 100%.
I'm so sorry you went through that. Yeah, no worries. I feel like our industry is one of the remaining, like, last bastions of a space in which someone can come in and take advantage of you and manipulate you, because these dreams are big and we want this thing that's a lot of other people want, and we really want to do it and we want to be good at it. And there's a lot of people who have bad intentions or have egos that they need to inflate.
With all this being said, what kind of advice would you have to anyone who's starting out in the industry, and or if you can go back and tell your younger self coming up something that you could tell yourself?
If I went back, I'd be like, everything you learned in theater school is wrong. Don't use that. Yes. I mean, I think that I would, so if I were to talk to someone or my younger self who's just starting out, it's so tough, because when I started out in, like, being a professional actor, that was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So my younger self was working in a industry that's completely different than it is now. We didn't have streaming services the way we do now. It was just a completely different audition scenario. So I think, if anything, I would go back and just say, there is no one way to do this. There's no right or wrong, and you're not fucking up if you do something that someone doesn't like or that someone's not impressed by. Mm-hmm. I would probably honestly tell... So someone who's starting out now, I think I should focus on that, because the industry is so different from when I started out.
But it's interesting that you said that, because it is true. It's a very different industry, you know?
Totally different industry. Because when I came out of theater school, our coach had told us that we should send comp cards to all the agents, and we should always wear skirts to auditions. And now, I mean, especially, with what COVID has done, auditions aren't even in person anymore. They're over Zoom or they're tapes. So if I were to talk to a person who's starting right now, I would say, you know, in a nicer way, I can't think of a nicer way to say this, but I would just say, watch your back. There are a lot of people out there who will try to take advantage of you, but there are a lot of people who really, truly, just genuinely want to tell stories and find good people to do that. So make sure that you find the right people. I wish someone had sort of a coaching company where they told you who the legitimate agents were, who the legitimate casting directors were, what a legitimate job offer looks like. And so I would sit a person down and be like, these agents are on the up and up. These acting schools are on the up and up. Take classes, engage with the community so that you make lots of connections and know lots of people, write your own stories, create your own stories, just put yourself in the soup. Because that was what I loved about Slate, is that the more you're with other actors and the more you're just practicing the skill, it feels like the universe is like, oh, hey, that person's doing that thing. I got them. Yeah. And then go out and do it, and don't be precious about it having to be like a major movie or a series. Do theater, do short films, do whatever lets you do the craft of acting, whether that's a class even. I know a lot of actors who, once they graduate theater school, they're like, well, I'm done. I learned it. I'm going to go do it now. You have to keep learning and just be a student of life too. You know, we were talking about this earlier, that you have to continue to engage with your life and your family and your community just as a human, because if you don't, you don't have a well to draw from when you perform.
And obviously, as you grow as a human, as a person, your work will change and evolve as well. Totally. Right? Like, that's just how it is. You know, our work is a lot of reflection of life and society. And, you know, as life changes and society changes like that, you're going to change and morph. And it's, you're never going to be like, okay, I've made it and I'm good. I got my degree in acting. I'm good. No, you're always going to be learning and changing. So I love what you said. That's very beautiful, for sure. Now, so tell us a little bit about what's coming up, because I know you have some stuff down the pipeline.
So I had my short film premiere at WIFF, and I have another short film premiering this Sunday that I am an actor in. I'm just a lowly actor. I didn't produce or write or direct, but it's by a wonderful woman called Max Maller, and she is a powerhouse. So we're premiering that short film on Sunday. I play her mother, which was traumatizing because she's 30. And I am playing her mom. This is the acting world. No! This is what happens to us.
Yes.
I have two movies coming out next year. One will be in cinemas, and the other one will be on a streaming service. And then I'm the face of a new brand of car. I don't know if I can say it or not, but I got a really great job as the lady who drives this car, and you want to buy it because she drives it.
So is it like was it like a print ad or like a commercial? Or
it's the national commercial for a car that's coming out. Yeah, so I'm going to be all over the place driving
that
a fancy car.
Amazing. Oh yeah, it's fun. Cool. And what are the film's genres? And if you could say the name, tell us.
I can't. That's a great question. If I can say the name, I think I can. One is a thriller, and the title just indicates that exactly. It's called Dying for Admission.
Oh.
So in that one, I play a detective, which is so fun. I so love playing that sort of character.
Yes.
And then the other one is called The Players. And it's about, it's set in the 90s, which was really fun. And it's about a young woman and her coming of age journey. And I have a role that engages with the young woman, but I'm not her parent. So I just don't know what else I can say.
Is that a thriller too, or is that like a...
No, it's a coming-of-age story, so it's a sort of... I don't even know what I would describe it as. It's a really, really, really beautiful art independent film.
That's... those are like literally like the dream. Like, I love a good indie, like, artistic film. What's your favorite, like, genre to play, I guess? Because you've kind of seen it all, and you've been through kind of all of it now. What is your favorite genre? If you could choose tomorrow, like, your favorite genre to be in, what would it be?
That's hard, because I think that changes. So changes. I love doing all of them. And if I had been doing horrors back-to-back, I'd be like, ugh, get me out of here. Yeah. I'm done. Let me do something hilarious. So I think it really... This is such a shitty answer, but all of them, because you get to flex different muscles in all the different genres, and I want to flex all the different muscles. And so if I've been doing one for a while, like I had this run where I kept getting cast as a mom whose kid died. And I was like, what is it about my face that looks like? And so I was over that, even though they're great acting exercises to go to that place. It was really, really nice to step out of that and play someone who was not a mother who'd lost
a child. Had a child die. No, I mean, I think we're by nature, we're chameleons, we're actors. So, you know, having different genres and different roles, that's like, you know, euphoria to us. So I understand. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. For me, like, changes all the time. Sometimes I want to be on a sitcom. Sometimes I want to be on a horror movie. Like, I just want to do it all, you know? So we're lucky, though. We can, and that's why I think, you know, auditioning is so important, like, to look at auditioning as, like, a fun thing instead of just, like, an eager thing, because that's your time to
practice,
flex whatever muscle that is. Yeah. And, like, you probably won't get the role. Let's be real. But that audition is your time to be on that show or movie, you know, hypothetically, you know, so just have fun with it. So that's why I kind of like look at auditioning like that way, because it's, I don't know. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. I used to look at auditioning like having, we talked about, you know, having come out of theater school and been taught that I had to get it quote unquote right. I was always so scared, and I would look at all the details, you know, the character does this, the character does that. There's a beat, there's a pause. And I would try to be what I thought the casting director or the director wanted. And then at some point I was like, fuck this shit. I'm just going to do what I want to do with this character. I'm going to black out all of that information. If they hate it, that's fine. At least I did the thing that I wanted to do with this character. And so I've taken characters into left field sometimes for that reason. And I've booked more, I think, doing that because I'm showing my authentic self through the character. And one quick story, I used to read for a casting director, and I remember an actor came in, you know, 5 to 7 actors into this role we were auditioning. And he came in and he did something totally off what was on the page. And it was so interesting. And then the casting director started directing every single audition to that note, because they loved it so much that they wanted to keep it for the role. So even if you don't get the role, sometimes part of you does. Like, part of you is in that role because they really love something you did.
I mean, I know that just from, like, just from casting our shows, you know? Like, I'm like, oh, I just didn't even know, like, it could even be played that way. And I'm like, that's really cool. Or, like, that's, you know? So, again, all of these casting directors, for the most part, are watching the same audition, same kind of way of it being played over and over again with all these different actors. So, if you can kind of, like, do something interesting, obviously don't go off the rails.
And don't do it for the sake of being interesting. Do it because this is actually how you see the character. So there's, I'm a fairly strong person. So if I have a, let's say, like, a mom whose kid died, I am not the person who's going to be bawling their head off the entire time. I handle sadness and fear very differently from what might be on the page. Like, a tear rolls down her cheek. Scratch that out and handle it the way you do, because that is you being authentically sad. It might not look like tears.
I love that. Now, because the show is called Unscripted, if you can have an unscripted, raw, unfiltered conversation with somebody, dead or alive, famous or not, who would it be and why?
Oh my God. You know what's so funny is that you had sent the notes for the interview, and I looked at that and I was like, oh, I can't. And then I forgot about it, and now I'm on the hot seat. The only reason I'm giving this answer is because I just watched him in something, and he was tremendous. So right now, today, I would want to interview Stanley Tucci.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How come? Is it just
because he's so good. He's such a fantastic actor. He seems like a fantastic human. And I would love to sit down and talk with him and ask him about his process, his career, why he looks the same way he did 30 years ago today. Is he drinking someone's blood?
Yes, yes.
but he was in or is in a show called Inside Man. And he plays a murderer, which, you know, based on what you see in the show, you're like, did he? He's just so great. And so I would love to have a conversation with him today about that role, his career, his idea on the industry, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just happy you didn't say Robin Williams, because literally every single person basically on the show has said Robin Williams, which is so freaking crazy. I was like every time someone would say it, I'm like, what? Like, how did you, what? Like, it tripped me out. Like, so I thought you were going to say that.
No.
And I was like, oh my God.
I mean, I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah.
No, it's purely because he's on my mind right now, because he was so good in that show. And I'm sure if I'd watched a different show, I would be answering a different name. But in this moment, I just really want to ask him. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. And also, just remember that you're the person who made all this happen, and you should be so proud of yourself. It wouldn't exist without you.
Well, it took a village. It was a whole team, and I really couldn't have done it without you, and I'm proud of you, and thank you, and I can't wait to keep watching you grow.
Yeah, and same.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Unscripted. You can keep in touch with Anna Kokazaz and all the amazing things that are coming up for her on her website. Link to that will be in the show notes. You can also follow me at Adam Murciano or at 911 Podcasts on Instagram. Twitter is 911_podcasts. Thank you so much. That was the last episode of season one of Unscripted with the Cascadia cast. I had so much fun deep diving, pun intended, to all these amazing, talented actors that made the show what it is. Stay subscribed to this feed because every time we do a new fiction show, we're going to have a new season of this show deep diving into the cast of whatever show is out at that time. So the next season of this will be the Ice Cream cast, which Ice Cream is streaming now. So if you haven't heard it, go check it out. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.